the 4x10 sessions, the 4 10-minute speakers are among the most popular things that we do here. We wanted to try something a little bit different this year and have a couple of 15-minute speakers. And the first of those I would like to introduce is a guy who, when he first got here, struck me as someone who absolutely did not want to be an Al-Anon member, or at least was really not convinced. But since then has grown to become someone who is enthusiastic and involved and works very hard to be a contributing and of service Al-Anon member. We're going to get him out from fixing the mic to using the mic because it's our recording engineer, Mark C. Mark, come up and share, please.
Hi, my name is Mark, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Mark.
I'm very grateful that Richard's so enthusiastic with his highs. I was doing so good today and yesterday, and I made a bit of a mistake. 5 minutes ago, I phoned my dad. He's doing okay. But I forgot how much the sound of his voice just still is. It just makes me feel raw. The conversation was good. I had some very exciting news to tell him, and I thought it would actually help this talk, but it's a little too much. Richard is very right in saying that when I first came to Al-Anon about a year and a half ago, it was something I'd been meaning to do for about 10 or 12 years. And the first Al-Anon I went to was at the one at the University of Saskatchewan. And, you know, I attended the University of Saskatchewan the whole time knowing that meeting was there, thinking, sure, next weekend I'll give it a try. I even had friends lined up that would volunteer to go with me. It just never happened. But, you know, I finally did, and I'm glad somebody told me attend at least 6 meetings before you decide if it's for you or not. And I think it took the 5th or 6th meeting to decide that I wanted to come back for more. This is probably the second meeting, I'll consider this a meeting, where I've actually got choked up. I'm usually pretty calm and pretty reserved, but I feel my nerves, you know, dissipating, so I'll be all right. I kind of do things in front of a crowd for a living sometimes. I'm a musician, so it's being in front of people is usually a lot of fun, but I usually have a guitar, so maybe I could do this to music, it'd be easier. I'd like to share, I had a really, really cool experience just this past Thursday. And it was actually inspired by being asked to do this. I went out to Pine Lodge to to chair an Al-Anon meeting out there. And I'd never done anything like that before. And it was something in the back of my mind for a long time, because Pine Lodge was the first rehab that my mom went to. Both my parents are. My mom's an alcoholic. My dad's a drug addict. And neither of them are really in recovery. It's a spotty recovery for them. And so it was an opportunity for me to face my past and to try to share some of my experience and strength and hope. And originally, I was going to go out there alone, which, like I said, I was feeling very strong this week, and I was like, I can do this. I have a history of thinking I can do things on my own all the time. And last minute, Phyllis offered to come with me, and thank you very much, Phyllis. Appreciate that. And so it was really neat. There was six family members out there, and being in that place and remembering back when I was 15 years old, going out there, dropping my mom off and leaving, basically, and seeing her 4 weeks later. I didn't actually participate in any sort of meetings out there when I was a teenager. I don't remember why. I don't know if the program's changed, but I have a feeling I didn't want to be a part of it. So it was interesting being in a meeting there and being a chair and being able to listen. And so part of this, with the theme of Together We Can Make It, it got me thinking a lot about Step 12. And how through my process of recovery, I'm finding that I'm finally at the point where I feel like strong enough and experienced enough in the program that I can start giving back a little more. And the thing I like about, I've started chairing a few more meetings here and there, it gives me more of an opportunity to allow others to participate. I can just kind of, start the meeting and let it run itself and be more of a listener. And my sponsor told me early on that we go to Al-Anon to give Al-Anon, not to get Al-Anon. And I'm finding through the giving portion of it, in doing service, that you actually get far more from it through the giving. And so step 12, I thought of right away when I heard the theme of the weekend. And I also thought of step 4 and 5 right away. And I was actually, when I was feeling good and confident about this, I was going to share my step 4 letter to my mom and dad, and there's actually quite a big difference between the two. And had I not worked through step 4 with my sponsor, I wouldn't have actually realized there was a difference in the level of resentment towards my mom and dad. So I will try to get through this here. So, dear Dad, you were irresponsible and suffered from mental illness. You exposed me to some very dark aspects of life. You scared me a lot. You were very selfish. You were very unpredictable. I believe you are a very good person, but can be filled with darkness, anger, rage, and sorrow. Your father was mean and unloving to you. I know you tried to be a better father to me than he was to you. I've been forgiving you slowly for several years now. I often feel more sadness than anger towards you. You have so many regrets in life. I hope that you will find peace within yourself and love for yourself. I am no longer resentful towards you. I may not always speak to you, but I will always love you. Your son, Mark. So that was the letter to my father. And then my very, very keen sponsor, I read this letter, and then I read my mom's letter, and he points out a very, very important difference between the two, and maybe you guys will notice something missing in this one. Dear Mom, I have held the most resentment towards you out of everyone on my list. You were my protector from Grandpa and Dad. You were the reliable parent. You were the loving and nurturing parent. You were the only person I could rely on and felt safe around as a child. Your alcoholism completely betrayed that trust. Your disease threatened my safety. When you became sick, I had no one. I had been so very angry at you for so very long. It is still difficult for me to watch you struggle. Your disease still clings to your heart. I want to help, and I've tried to help you, but I know that this is a decision only you can take. I, however, continue to talk about my recovery with you for two reasons. One, if I can explain it to you, I can explain it to everyone. I want to be able to share my experience, strength, and hope with anyone who wants to listen. And two, I still have hope deep down that you will start your own journey of recovery. I love you and pray that you find the strength within yourself to forgive and to love again. Your loving son, Mark. And so when I read that, Richard's like, I think you missed something. And, you know, I compared the two, and it's like, no, I think I got it covered. And he said, you didn't say that you released your resentment towards your mother like you did your father. And so my father, as I specifically say, I'm no longer resentful towards you. And I don't actually say that in my mom's letter. And it brings up, it makes me realize that, you know, I go through the steps, and I totally understand why people go through the steps again, because it's a process. It's, you know, that analogy of peeling the layers off an onion. There's still some burrs there, you know, that's, I didn't get them all the first time, and that's okay. And but without being able to share that with my sponsor and with the group, I wouldn't see these things. And so I think that's, you know, me trying to tie this theme in, together we can make it. That you know, without Phyllis making that trip with me, I don't know how that meeting would have turned out. It might have turned out like this. Maybe you should have joined me up here, Phyllis. Yeah. You're my rock. Something else that's really stood out for me lately is the line. I think it's from the Promises. Was it the Promises that were read this morning? That fear will be replaced by faith, and gratitude will come naturally. And that feels so very true to me. And even the fear of being vulnerable, I don't think I wouldn't have done this talk, you know, even a few months ago. I would have been just like, forget it, find someone else to speak this afternoon. But I thank you for letting me fumble through this and be vulnerable in front of you. And I thank you very much for listening. Thanks.
You guys make me cry. Our next speaker is someone who I don't think we get to hear from enough, because every time I've ever heard her speak, it's been absolutely marvelous. But we don't hear from her a lot. I got to serve with her in the Area World Service Committee for a while, and kind of got to know her a little better on the personal level there. And we always see her here. And one more time, it's just time to get her up here. So with that, Joy, would you come up and share, please?
Thanks, Richard. I always appreciate your introductions. I think you have a real knack for making people feel special, so thank you. My name is Joy. I am a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Joy.
I'll take that to mean you can hear me okay. When Richard asked me to speak 2 days ago, I was justifiably nervous because this is usually a pretty good crowd. And then he said it was going to be at 1:15. And I thought to myself, well, that's okay, because everyone will either take a late lunch or be half asleep. But you guys look awfully wide awake. here's what I'm hoping to do. I didn't write anything down. I'm more of a wing it kind of person these days, but so you never know how it'll go. But what I'm hoping is to talk just real briefly about why I belong in Al-Anon and why I am an adult child, and then talk a lot about my experience with Together We Can Make It, because I believe that to the core of my being. And I have to say to Mark, thank you for that very vulnerable sharing, but you kind of stirred me up a little, so if I cry, I'm blaming him. Yes. So, yes, I am an adult child. My parents divorced when I was quite young. I was only, not even four. And I know now that one of the reasons that they split up is because my biological father is an untreated adult child himself, and just screams with the illness to this day. And my mom left him to move about 13-hour drive away to this tiny little northern town with my stepdad, who is, if he's still alive, is an alcoholic. So there's been a couple of memories that have just been popping into my head lately that remind me that no matter how far I come in program, no matter how much work I do, and no matter how mature and adult I feel, there's still that little child who grew up in it in me. One of them is that need to try to make it perfect so that nobody will get upset. I can clearly to this day remember a time when it was really important to my stepdad that things were clean, and he had a very high standard of clean. And I remember scrubbing furiously at this tiny little speck on the counter because I was sure that he was going to lose it. And he came home and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I can't get this spot out. I'm really sorry." And I was, you know, trying to, "It's going to be okay. Please don't get upset." And he was in a good mood that day, and he said, "What speck? Like, it's fine." And the fact that I needed to make that perfect, that's why I need to still come. And another memory was waiting for the bus one morning, and my parents had spent the morning having their usual time of, after he's been drinking all night and they've had terrible fights, the next morning is when my mom would attack and he would cower, right? And I was crying at the bus stop because it was too much for me that morning. And a neighbor saw. See, your fault. And that day after school, and I wasn't very old, I think maybe 6 or 7, and after school my mom sat me down and had a very serious conversation of why it is not okay to cry when the neighbors can see you. And so if I ever wonder why I belong, I just need to remember that I was told flat out that you do not feel, you do not talk about it. And I wanted to be a perfect kid, so I did that. I did that for a long time. And so, you know, the rest of my growing up years, I think, are fairly typical. There was a divorce and there was cheating and there was me just trying to either disappear or be perfect, whichever one I thought would make everybody better. And so by the time I came into Alateen, I was 15. And I had all those isms. I would throw up before exams because I was so scared that I would fail. And I hated my mother and I loved my mother. And her and I, because of the divorces and the alcoholism and her mental illness, we had this weird relationship where sometimes I was the mom and I just, if I could just, if she could be happy, then I would be happy. So that whole scenario, and I didn't know how to make friends or be a friend or anyways, bottom line is I belong. I came into Alateen because I didn't know how to say no to my mother, so when she said you should go to Alateen, I said okay. I tell people that I came because there was a guy there that I liked, but we broke up and I stayed. And I don't know why I stayed. I don't know exactly why, but oh my gosh, I'm so glad. I don't know why I got to be so privileged. And in Alateen is when I first got that experience of together. You guys know how it is, right? When you just don't think that anyone will understand. And you just think that you're destined to live alone. And even in high school when I had like a group of misfit friends that I could cling to and I had Alateen and whatever else, I always just thought I was by myself. And I don't know, Alateen meetings and my Alateen sponsors, they just made it so I wasn't anymore. And maybe that's why I stayed. So for me, Together We Can Make It in the beginning was about people who had already been a long way on their journey, helping me to just figure out those first few steps. I did my first step 4 in Al-Anon, and it was really basic. I mean, when I look back at it, I didn't talk about anything deep. But still, it was important because I trusted another human being. I chose this lady that had been a friend of my mom's, and she'd known me since I was a little kid, so I thought she was pretty safe. And I told her all my stuff, and most of it at that time was about how unworthy I felt. And so everything I told her was about how I'd done this wrong and I wasn't good enough. And at the end of it, she just hugged me tight and said, you know, you're a special person and you're a good person. And for me, that was a really important thing to hear. I'm sorry, I'm really emotional now. I did not expect to be. So I stayed in Alateen until I was 18. I think that I was one of the really, really fortunate ones because we managed to have pretty much the same sponsors and the same group tied to it the whole time. So by the time I was ready to go to Al-Anon, I knew the Al-Anon members. They were meeting next door to where we were meeting. So I didn't have to go through that big, big transition. I was by far the youngest member of that group. And my mom had gone to that group first. So I struggled for the first few years with being known as my mother's daughter. I felt like I didn't have my own identity. And certainly I did not have a spouse who was alcoholic or kids that were alcoholic. But somehow it still worked. I had, there was a few people in that meeting that I think kept me coming. There was one guy, he is 27 years older than me, but he started in the program around the same time as me, and so somehow we struck up a friendship. And he would, when I was living far away from meetings and didn't have a car, he would pick me up every meeting, which when I think about it now is like he did a major service, but he never made a big deal about it. He would just call me up on a Wednesday and say, "You coming to the meeting?" And I'd say, "Yep." And he'd say, "Okay, I'll come pick you up." And he was one of those people that was really important to my recovery. And he also got me involved in service. So I suspect that's the other reason that I stuck around in Al-Anon. I mean, at that time, I was still really deep in the that sort of ism of, you know, please tell me how you I can make you like me. And he said, "Why don't you come to a district meeting?" And I actually hadn't even gone to a meeting when he said, "Why don't you be the district secretary?" And I said, "I don't know if I can do that." And he said, "Yep, sure you can." So I did. And I was hooked from that very first tiny little taste of service work. I was hooked because at the end of that meeting, when I handed out the minutes, everybody said, "You did such a good job," and, you know, "Come back," and "I'm so glad you're the secretary," and, you know, that little creature inside of me that needed approval just, like, sucked it all in. So, but, you know, it gets, it changes. The person and the program that I needed when I first came in is vastly different, and yet not even one little bit less important than the person and the program that I am in need today. And I mean, I could talk for hours about the people. I don't think I could do this program by myself. I could read literature and I could internalize it, and I could, you know, it's like the communication workshop last night. I mean, that's not rocket science to me. I get it. I statement, stay calm, be pleasant. But until I have someone that I can bounce it off of, it doesn't become part of me. But anyways, I won't. I'm going to fast forward because I want to talk a little bit about why I keep coming. I could still say I qualify because my stepmother, who I am now trying to have a relationship with, is an alcoholic, and I have a relationship with my dad, who is an untreated adult child, so I still qualify. But more than that, I'm reminded, especially at things like this and when I sort of get triggered, that I will always be an adult child of an alcoholic, and I can't be cured, so I need to keep coming. But more than that, I get to be one of the people in that Together We Can Make It group. And there's a great reading in Courage to Change. I don't know the page number. And it talks about how before program, I was on a ladder, and I was looking at all the people who were way above me, and I was looking down on all the people that were way below me. And you can't fit very many people side by side on a ladder, so it's really lonely. And it talks about coming down off that ladder and joining a circle. In the middle of that circle is God, however you may see God. For me, I just picture a big glowing light with this circle of people, and the circle can get bigger to accommodate more people. And I just can't imagine not being part of the circle. And I feel like every time somebody new comes in, or every time I can have an opportunity to be part of service work or even do something scary like this, I'm just being part of that circle, and I believe that that's why it works. So I thank you for the opportunity, and I thank you all for listening.
I'm pretty sure that Joy gets better every time I hear her. And tonight, after Kathy's talk, when we close, I don't know about you, but I'm going to see a big glowing ball in the middle of the room. That's so that's our two 15-minute speakers. We are running late, so we'll take a 5-minute break here and then come back for our AA speaker.